You can listen to The Professional Left on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, or at our website, professionalleft.blogspot.com, where you can also contribute to this podcast. There's a PayPal button at our website, or you can mail us a letter and or contribution at P.O. Box 9133, Springfield, Illinois, 62791.
This is the podcast for November 22nd, 2013. It's not safe for work.
Recorded live from just outside the Eric Prince Blackwater book signing and professional assassination group, it's the Professional Left with Driftglass and Blue Gal.
A wild week.
We got exorcisms. We got
nuclear options.
Gay people. It's like something that AMC would make a series out of with dead people walking around and drugs. We got drug users.
Harry Reid is now Kenyan, and he's coming for your guns. IRS scandal, Benghazi. All right.
This is sort of like The Walking Dead meets Breaking Bad, because you have your drug-using congressman, who apparently is part of a disease vector that started in Toronto. It's working its way to our country. And coupled with the zombie apocalypse, you have mindless, chomping idiots trying to bring down the government again. And the only thing we have left to use against them is the nuclear option. So we're going to use that.
We did use that. And as I said, Harry Reid is now Kenyan, according to the right-wingers on Twitter.
Yeah.
And he's coming for your guns next.
Yes.
Actually, that was on Twitter. Someone tweeted that. Watch them filibuster away your right to a gun.
Yeah. When you wade hip deep through this stuff all week, the specific incidences of just damn, I'm trying not to swear this episode. I fail miserably, but.
Well, as we said last night, every time you hear us swear,
right,
a quarter goes in the cat treat swear jar.
It does. So the cats love it.
Their
cats
are going, fuck you podcast.
Cats are saying, swear, man. tear them a new one. No, it's when you do like we do, we saturate ourselves with this. We really do keep up with all the events. Our ear is always open. Yeah. And so any particular incident of right-wing stupidity is not surprising. It's like, oh, of course they're going to say that. This is just how they manifest their psychosis.
And it's not unique to the United States.
No, but we do it better than anybody else.
I know we've got an agenda here, but if you don't mind, I'd like to start our podcast by reading a quick note from Andy.
Yeah.
Over in England.
Absolutely.
And he wanted to point out to me, because he's been reading up on Gettysburg and the Gettysburg Address, and had some things to send me about that from across the pond.
Yeah.
And he said that some older people seem intent on never forgetting the Civil War. I don't mean in the sense of knowing it from a historical perspective, but instead to disguise their thinly veiled racism.
Yeah.
Because I'm over 56 years old, I have some perspective of the racist attitudes that were once so prevalent over here in England. They haven't gone away, but we have no defining event such as a civil war for people to rally around. So their anger is somewhat incoherent.
Yeah.
And he pointed me to an article in The Guardian where in 1964, you know, there were a lot of refugees and people of not English background moving into working class neighborhoods in London and around Great Britain.
Mm-hmm.
And Peter Griffiths, who was a Tory non-entity at the time, but his campaign, Peter Griffiths' campaign was, if you want an N-word for a neighbor, vote Labour.
Mm-hmm.
And no one would ever, the Guardian points out, no one would ever dream of saying such a thing. They'd be absolutely, you know, wiped out if they ever said that today.
Mm-hmm.
But that is not very far from what we saw with the Wallace campaign.
No,
and
absolutely not.
So let me just finish up his letter. He says, we have moved on. Even the racists have. But some racism always remains. It's much more subtle, but I can tell you it's a darn sight better than it was when I became politically aware in the 1970s. And I'm not so sure about that. There was a rally, a Tea Party kind of rally in Philadelphia this week,
mm-hmm.
where a woman said something to the effect of, Obama's like a skunk, half black, half white, and he stinks. Ha, 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 ha.
That is absolutely standard fare.
It's
absolutely standard fare in my email inbox. That's standard fare on the graphics these people shovel out their outbox by the dozens every day. That's just their vocabulary.
Have you noticed this week and last week with the JFK coverage and Gettysburg Address coverage, more assassination kind of stuff going on?
Oh, yeah.
I've noticed an increase in that.
More loose talk about how to get rid of a tyrant.
Right. And talk about what to me is more dangerous than even that is our legal basis for this.
Yes. Yeah. This would be legal. This would totally be legal.
This is legal because we're overthrowing a tyrant, you know, who's now just a dictator.
And every
Harry Reid.
And it's a cult. And they keep talking themselves into crazy shit. And they've tossed out anyone who's there to tell them that what they're doing is nuts. They've just gotten rid of any negative feedback loop for all of their crazy ideas. And actually, first of all, I'd like to thank Andrew, is it, for the letter?
Yeah, Andy. Yeah.
Andy. He's recovering
from the flu. Get better, Andy. He's a longtime supporter of our podcast.
Yeah. And we have lots of people to thank this episode. Yeah. But, while you were talking, and I was listening, but it prompted me, and I don't know why this didn't occur to me before, but there is a different history of Gettysburg.
Yeah.
And I'd like to read a short paragraph from a great American author, if you don't mind.
No, go right ahead.
And we've touched on this before, but Andy prompted me like, oh, of course, there's a different history of Gettysburg because it's the 150th anniversary. This is from William Faulkner. And it's from his 1948 novel, Intruder in the Dust. I misquoted this before, I'm sure, in passing. But this is he wrote about the promise the afternoon of July 3rd, 1863 held for the Southern cause, the moment before the Confederate attack that became known as Pickett's Charge. Mm. And it goes like this. For every Southern boy 14 years old, not once, but whenever he wants it, there is an instant when it's still not yet 2 o'clock on that July afternoon in 1863. Mm-hmm. The brigades are in position behind the rail fence. The guns are laid and ready in the woods, and the furled flags are already loosened to break out. And Pickett himself, with his long oiled ringlets and his hat in one hand, probably, and his sword in the other, looking up the hill, waiting for Longstreet to give the word. And it's all in the balance. It hasn't happened yet. It hasn't even begun yet. It not only hasn't begun yet, but there is still time for it not to begin against that position and those circumstances. Mm-hmm. There's a wish. There's a strong wish that that never happened, that they didn't lose. And it's just this thing, this deep, horrible cancer in the Southern soul. And I'm not saying everybody in the South. I'm not saying Stephen Colbert, who was born there. I'm not saying people in the North are immune. Chicago's a pretty racist city when you think about it. Mm-hmm. But there's this strong urge, this strong desire to suspend themselves just before that moment and wish that it never happened. Because if it never happened, the South would have won, or at least fought to a draw. They would have gotten, things would have unfolded differently, and the horrible destruction of the South would never have happened. But it's a wish for a time when you could have slaves.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Peel away all the pretty poetry, all the language, all the gorgeous martial, all the heroism of soldiers who thought they were fighting for a just and noble cause because their leaders lied to them and their culture lied to them and their pastors lied to them. Peel it all away. It's people defending the right to own other people as animals and treat them that way because that was their natural right. And the people who are currently calling themselves conservatives absolutely draw direct lineal descent from that moment to this.
Mm-hmm.
And they hate it. They hate that happened. They hate that Appomattox happened. They hate that they had to surrender. In that video documentary by Nancy Pelosi's daughter, when she was interviewing Hicks.
Oh, yeah.
There's that brief moment where it says, we lost the war. And you know what war he's talking about.
Yeah, the South will rise again.
Is no other fucking war for them.
No, there isn't.
It's just that moment in history when they could have had it all. And it was taken away from them. And they've been making up excuses and inventing cults and inventing language and inventing ideologies and inventing political theories all to cover up the fact that that's what they want. And now here we are in 2013, 150 years later. And they still cannot abide the black man in the White House.
Mm-hmm.
And they've had it beaten into them enough. They can't just say that.
No, they have to say Muslim.
So they have to say
Kenyan, exactly. And they have to say dictator. Yeah.
Invent language, but they can talk as loosely as they want about tyrants and get rid of tyrants and the legal. Because you know what? 150 years ago, 100 years ago, 70 years ago, they could have lynched an uppity Negro.
Mm-hmm.
And it would have been as legal as seawater.
Yep.
And they missed those times because that's when they knew how
that's
to keep
a loss
those people,
of power for them, which is what they wanted. Yeah.
Keep those people in their place. They hate gay people because they used to be able to punch them out and drag them around and call them fags. Now they can't. They hate uppity women because they used to be able to grab ass and make their lives miserable and keep them as virtual chattel, and they can't anymore. All that has, in fact, been taken away from them.
Yeah.
And Barack Obama is the perfect distillate representation of everything they believe they really have had taken from them, and they should have had it taken from them because it was awful. And if you're nostalgic for anything about those times other than a 5% unemployment rate and 90% tax rates, which I'm nostalgic for, then you are living in the wrong century and you should shut up and stop playing in politics because the world has passed you by.
Yeah. And history is against you forever.
And you can make that into a great cause all you want. You can make yourself into the aggrieved minority underdog. You can make a war on you can invent a war on Christmas in an 80% Christian nation and sell a lot of books like Sarah Palin does. But none of it's true. Mm-hmm. And you're dying.
Yeah, your party is dying. That is absolutely
your party is dying. Your ideas are dying. Your ideology is dying. It's all dying off. And we're glad to see it go.
I have to remind myself this week, as some of this very ugly language appeared on Facebook and other places about killing and justification for assassination and those kind of things.
Yep.
There were some concern trolling that went on right after the primaries in 2008.
Uh-huh.
And it was clear, particularly, that Hillary Clinton was going to endorse Obama. And so some of the Clinton supporters were having to pivot and adjust to this.
Yeah.
And a couple of people who were Clinton supporters emailed me at the time and said, I'm just worried that he's going to get assassinated.
Uh-huh.
And I brought this up with you. You and I were not married at the time. But
we did this. So it was like a man act kind of thing.
I don't remember you crossing me state lines for immoral purposes.
For politically immoral purposes.
Politically immoral purposes. Yeah. Oh, okay. You said to me, we do not negotiate with terrorists.
Yeah.
And this president or this candidate, if he's going to win an election, is going to win an election. And we're not going to be terrorized into not electing him because that's what that is.
Because some Timothy McVeigh might decide that the patriotic thing to do would be to blow up a building with him in it or some other thing. We don't do things like that. We're not going to be afraid anymore. Mm-hmm. You know, what does Victor Laszlo say in Casablanca? You know, so what if you kill me?
Yeah.
A thousand more would come to. Not even Nazis can kill that fast.
Yep.
I don't care. It doesn't matter what you do. It doesn't matter because no matter what you do, history is going to swarm over you and make you into nothing. And 100 years from now, people will look back on you with the same horror and disgust and bewilderment as they look back on slaveholders and they look back on segregationists. Except this time, baby, this time there'll be a record. Yep. This time there's going to be a video record of all the silly shit you said, all the bullshit emails you sent, all those funny graphics with Barack Obama as a witch doctor. All that is part of history now.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't outrun it. That's who you are. Mm-hmm. Embrace it or shut up and go away. But that's what history will look back on you and see. They'll see a silly, ignorant, angry, stupid, white asshole who is willing to let Rush Limbaugh shit in his head because it makes him feel like a man. That's what they'll see. They'll see a pathetic creature who is hanging on to a horrible past and couldn't get over the fact that he is not going to be able to push around people who are weaker than him anymore.
By the way, Mitch McConnell's reaction to this whole thing was that he couldn't wait for President Rubio to stack the court.
So now we are talking about science fiction.
Good. Yeah.
Afraid we'd miss that this week.
I'm waiting for President Elizabeth Warren to put Barack Obama and Bill Clinton on the court.
Yeah.
If we're gonna jack off to our political fantasies, let's go full bore on that.
It's the Gene Wilder and Cleavon Little on the Supreme Court.
Excuse me while I whip this out.
Yeah, it's the dream team. It's on there for the next 30 years. Suck it, conservative.
I don't want Elizabeth Warren to be president.
I don't either. And you know why?
Yeah, we talked about this last night, but go ahead. Let you start the conversation.
I want her in the Senate forever.
Yeah.
I want Elizabeth Warren to serve in there for 30 years. And I know how we feel about term limits, you and I. I know how we... But I want her in there being exactly who she is.
Yep.
Because she is, you know, Al Franken is in there doing good work, but Al Franken, for really good reasons, just doesn't go on television.
Right.
He's concerned about Minnesota business.
Yep.
And he's deep in the weeds and he's doing good stuff.
Well, and he's not in a overwhelmingly blue state.
Exactly.
Like, so he's got to watch his steps.
Elizabeth
not
Warren,
become a celebrity senator. He's already enough of that. So
Elizabeth Warren has a job for life if she wants it.
Yep.
With a microphone every bit as big as John McCain's, mm-hmm. who's the senator from TV.
And I liked what you said last night, too, about having the laminated ID that gets her on Meet the Press if she wants to go.
If she wants to go. Someone out there thinks she's not liberal enough. I get that. You're gonna, you know, I'll get a snark about her
got
on
it.
The wrong side of something. And I will concede all that. That being said, I really, really want her to have a gigantic microphone and a liberal sense, a really genuine liberal sensibility and all that credibility that comes with inventing an entire federal agency and then being shot down by the people that she now works with. Mm-hmm. Suck it, people who tried to deny me my job, who did deny me my job. Now I'm your colleague.
And I have the microphone. Yep. And I'm going to talk about expanding Social Security instead of cutting it. We're going to change that conversation.
That being said, we have both agreed that if she runs,
She runs for president, this is our promise.
We're going to decamp to Iowa to knock on doors for
her. We're going to go knock with the children. We're going to go knock on doors for Elizabeth Warren if she runs.
But, you know,
we don't want her to run because we want her to be in the Senate forever. Yes.
What a dilemma. This wonderful person has all these possibilities. And of course, she is, you know, the vessel into which we pour our hopes.
Yes.
And I think we all learned, at least at a younger age, John Anderson, let's say,
Kennedy.
That, you know, we're essentially hiring a temporary employee to do a particular job of work.
Who has to compromise a lot of our principles away once they're in office.
And so that being
and will disappoint us.
And we do a six year annual review and we go over their pluses and minuses. But all of that, you know, if you don't want to get involved in politics at all, if it's too dirty or too compromisey or too disappointing, I get that. But don't listen to the podcast because that's what we talk about. It's like, okay, here we live in the horribly imperfect universe where Mitch McConnell exists and Rand Paul exists and they've been elected to the Senate.
And they jack off on the Senate floor to President Marco Rubio. Oh.
And the tyranny of forcing people to take
Harry Reid is a bully.
Things. Yeah.
He's just a bully.
Yeah. Objecting, they're objecting to us, objecting to them, obstructing government.
Yeah. Well, and that's something that we have to go after the media about, too, because they are framing this on CNN, which I had to turn to because Mrs. Greenspan wasn't covering the nuclear option this afternoon.
If I comforted you.
CNN was framing this is the biggest change in Senate rules since Thomas Jefferson, which is the Republican framing.
This
is what they're saying.
Yeah.
And no one is pointing out that the change came way before this when Mitch McConnell decided to block everything.
Yeah.
And abuse the power of the filibuster.
Yeah.
And that was the change that Harry Reid is reacting to.
Yeah, taking away the keys from a drunk, belligerent driver who's plowed through one crowd after another is not tyranny.
No, it's not. And it's like building a fence around your yard when your neighbor's dog has taken a shit in it 40 times.
Yeah.
And the dog says, how dare you?
And if you're really, really old like me, you remember that Bill Clinton's budget passed 51-50, I believe.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. George W. Bush's tax cuts. 51-50.
Yes, there was a time, my children, in living memory, when the Senate used to pass things 51-50 and not filibuster every fucking thing. And by the Senate, I mean Republicans.
Yeah.
So the idea that
David Gregory coming out and just saying it takes 60 votes to do something in the Senate like that.
No, it doesn't.
Fact.
No,
it doesn't.
It does if Mitch McConnell is willing to smash the engine of government and destroy the possibility of comity and compromise in order to undo a lawful election that you couldn't cheat your way into undoing in the first place. Congratulations. And I get that the people on the other side of this issue really feel deeply that they are principled, noble, minority heroes standing up to tyranny. But if I may remind you of what John Stewart said 10 weeks after Barack Obama was elected the first time, he had this long thing about GOP just lost their shit. And remember that. This is really important. pin this in your memory. When the Republican story changes to, you know, we gave this guy a shot. You know, we were very accommodating for the first few years. And eventually,
that's what Mitch McConnell said today. We were very fair.
That is absolutely how people who have been lobotomized and have their skulls full of Rush Limbaugh's awful think, because they're just brainwashed morons. But go back to Jon Stewart telling them, look, it's been 10 weeks. And you had 10 weeks of Mark Levin and Glenn Beck talking about tyranny, the overwhelming, the jackbooted thugs. And they really did lose their shit the minute he was inaugurated. Yep. Just absolutely. And Jon Stewart, as I recall, this is a few years ago, said, pace your rage. You know, it's not good for you. But they've been doing this forever.
And also, you seem to have confused tyranny with losing.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's the exact – and the thing is, they don't understand the difference between losing an election and tyranny and the end of the republic. Yeah. They don't understand the difference between affordable health care for most Americans and the loss of freedom forever at the hands of a fascist. Yeah. Because that's the only vocabulary they have left in their – empty, mushy heads. They can only describe the world as patriotic heroes trying to save America from awfulness and fascist monsters out to destroy the United States. Yeah. Those are the only two categories after 30 years of listening to Rush Limbaugh and Sean Hannity and Fox News. Those are the only two categories they have left in their tiny, tiny brains. And therefore, if you're not in one, you must be in the other. So whatever Barack Obama proposes is tyranny. And opposing it is, therefore, by definition, noble and patriotic. Mm-hmm. And that's why putting up with this, you know, and at some point, that psychotic view of the universe, that completely, really mentally ill, that dangerously mentally ill view of the universe actually hits the rubber, hits the road, and it becomes governance. Mm-hmm. And when you see that craziness manifested in governance, you see it manifested as, let's just obstruct everything. Yeah. And at some point, you say, you know what? You don't get to do this anymore. You know, you will abuse this. This really is a Bush administration holdover, because Bush administration abused every flexible rule the government has. Lawyers were compromised. Journalists were used to mule information into the press. Every place where you gave the government any benefit of the doubt, they rushed in there with Karl Rove and Jeff Gannon and their people to abuse it, to push.
You mean the prostitute Jeff Gannon?
Poor Jeff Gannon.
Poor
Jeff Gannon. And it's not an accident that they really do believe that there's no alternative, that obstructing everything is somehow legitimate. And when you tell them, no, it's not, they lose their shit. But that's what Sean Hannity gets paid for.
Did you see where Shock on Twitter said that you and I should be in Congress?
Yeah. No, I didn't.
I just want to say that there isn't enough cocaine in the world.
No. There's not. Although I have considered running for Congress every now and then.
Every now and then you should consider running for Congress.
I understand they have full dental and medical.
See, if you have the dental, that would be good.
That'd be awesome.
Does your wife get the dental too?
I think after 6 months you get to come on my plan.
Get to come on your plan. Okay. Yeah.
Why are you running for Congress? So my kids can have
so my wife can go to the dentist.
Yeah. I like that. That's a motive I can understand.
That's a bumper sticker. So his wife can go to the dentist.
Wait a minute.
For Congress.
You're making me sign up for Obamacare if I win? Well, fuck that. I'm just going to work for a think tank.
Yeah. Think tanks.
Anyway, would you like to play another quick episode of Guess Which Party?
Guess Which Party voted to drug test SNAP recipients?
Yeah, drug test public aid recipients, because, you know, those people. And then it turns out, oh yeah, I put
starting coke from Colombia, because I like to travel there.
Yeah, I like to go to the source.
Your vacation spot is Colombia. Really?
Wow, that's weird that you would go down to, Trey Radel, the hip-hop congressman, because he's hip and he's fresh, and soon to be available, girls, I'm pretty sure.
Along with David Brooks.
Yeah, I look forward to him and David Brooks sharing an apartment, a bachelor apartment, an efficiency apartment.
The odd couple.
Yeah. Oh, that would be gorgeous. Oh, let's do that.
I think you've got a Photoshop coming up on that one, don't you? Poor David Brooks. Well, I mean, he's getting a divorce, and that's never anything that anyone wants to celebrate.
The only thing he should suffer
except
for.
Except he's available, lady. All the single ladies. Yeah. Okay.
No, he should suffer for his horrible writing and crappy opinions and lying a lot. But divorce is, you know, unless you're an absolute.
It's affected so many of us. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and unless you're an absolute monster, unless you're an abusive monster, in which case I hope you do suffer in your divorce. I don't ever wish, because it's wrenching. It's awful. It's, you know, why would anybody go through it unless they had no alternative? So, but, you know, let him suffer for all the other crap that he's had to do. But I do look forward. I do look forward to the, with a little guilty pleasure, of him coming back from book leave. Apparently that's what this is. Okay. Book leave is, my marriage is messed up. Would the New York Times pay me for 3 or 4 months or 5 months or 6 months to get my life?
Get it all ironed out. Yeah.
Although I'm still going to go on PBS for some reason. Yeah. Okay. I'm still going to go on radio. So the only job I'm not going to do is the paying one. So, okay, there's that. But I do look forward, because he is such a fucking drone, a scold about how poor people and the problems of disintegrating families. Yeah,
the bottom feeders of that hate the family, you know.
The disordered families.
Disordered families, yes.
In difficult communities. And that's what's wrecking this goddamn country. And the 60s hit, Lou Gal, those damn hippies.
They liberalized divorce laws and destroyed the family.
There's no respect for authority or tradition or whatever, blah, blah, blah. I anxiously await him explaining away the collapse of his marriage by blaming Henry V and the 60s. Because, you know, believe me, I have enough factoids about David Brooks's columns for the last 10 years in my memory.
Oh, yeah.
To spot exactly, if he ever does, I doubt he ever will, to spot exactly, and this is, you know, to cut the snark for 1 minute, since he pimped that Iraq war as hard as he could. Mm-hmm. And then it all went horribly south on him. And then he just pretended he never said what he said. That's how he got out of it. He just, you know, I told you, I was at that public forum where he was asked point blank, what about all this, in light of all this, you know, modesty and, you know, being cooperative and being prudent and not trashing people, what about all the shit you wrote that is exactly that stuff? And he just said, I never wrote that. I don't remember writing that.
It was a lie.
Which absolute fucking lie. Absolutely. The way he gets away with that is by lying and by having his colleagues protect him when he lies, by never asking him any questions. Like, no one ever asked Trey Radel, dude, didn't you drug test people?
And no one asked him that.
Nobody asked him
that. At the press conference.
The only person who asked that question? People on MSNBC and Jon Stewart.
Yep.
The Comedy Central. The only people who asked questions that are the most obvious question in the world. So I don't... But David Brooks was an absolute, you know, pro-Bush tax cuts, and that went horribly wrong, and pro-Iraq war, and that went horribly wrong. He's been wrong just forever, and he never gets fired, and nothing ever sticks to him. But that's because he didn't go to Iraq. Actually, he never visited Iraq.
He's never been to Iraq.
None of the bullshit.
I've traveled all over the Middle East, but I've never been to Iraq.
Never been to Iraq. What? But, you know, it's pretty much like, you know, it's pretty much like the Upper West Side. Oh, it's not, really. But the point being, all of the shitty opinions he's held and gotten rich off of and used as a career ladder have never affected him personally. All the blaming the Jerry Sandusky fiasco on the 60s, which did.
Yes, he actually did.
His kids were never, you know, molested. None of his children were ever shot at in a war. None of his kids ever got wiped out in a global economic recession. All the bullshit
opinions. Shot by a terrorist in their own school.
Exactly. All the bullshit opinions he has held, he has been able to hold because he has been completely insulated from the real world by money and by rich friends.
Yep.
Now, it's inside the perimeter. Mm-hmm. He actually is personally affected by something that millions of us go through, and we don't sit around and talk about how the hippies in the 60s and the disordered families are to blame. Sociology, neurobiology, blah, blah, blah. No, this is bullshit. This is real. This is real stuff. My hope for him would be that this messes him up a little bit.
And snaps him out of it. Yeah.
This actually wakes him up to the fact that you cannot write these god-awful, dry, horrid, abstract columns about how theoretical little people should behave in the face of your own life going south on you like this.
Yeah.
And learn a goddamn lesson. Actually read Edmund Burke and read the Old Testament and read a little bit of the religion of humility that you teach at Yale, and actually come to terms with the fact that a lot of the shit you believe is just awful and bad
and wrong.
And perfume on what are much deeper, more structural problems. And you know what? If you ever reach that point, the next step in that path is, oh my God, one side of the political equation is actually to blame for most of our problems.
Yep.
But, you know, that would be my hope. And it seems a little cruel, but I think a little harsh, you know, tough love, a little harsh reality to wake him the hell up would not. And if he emerged from that a better person, then God, go with God. God bless you.
Let's see what happens. We'll have to see what happens. All right.
Speaking of marriage,
same-sex marriage in Illinois.
Marriage.
Now, yeah. Who is the guy who's going to do the exorcism in Springfield?
He's like the Bishop of Springfield, Bishop Pop Rocks or something.
What happened to Pope? Is Pope Francis going to come and smack him personally?
Wouldn't that be funny? He just sort of flies in to fire him. He turns around. There he is going, dude, man.
Dude, stop it.
I'm not angry. I'm just really disappointed.
Disappointed, man.
But yeah, we're now the 16th state. And there's something, I don't know if it's political theater coincidence, but it's the day after the 150th anniversary of the Gettysburg Address.
Yeah.
For the great speeches about human rights in human history, certainly in American history. My state makes it legal to marry whoever you love. Yeah. And it was done. We are the 16th state, and Abraham Lincoln was the 16th president.
So Governor Quinn could benefit from some queer eye for the straight guy fashion
and how to present yourself in public.
He's kind of just an old Irish Paul who's not very tall and doesn't have a lot of pizzazz, shall we say. Yeah. Governor Quinn, we're here to make you over. We're just going to do this all over now. Now that you've signed some gay marriage into law, let's give you a makeover.
Now, imagine my hand waving in front of him. Look at yourself. Look at your decisions. Look, what's brought you to this place? This horrible fashion place.
What's brought you to this rumpled suit?
Because it worked for me, you know?
Because I can sleep in it.
And speaking of Illinois, so everyone knows, we got creamed, not us personally. The state got creamed with tornadoes.
Yep.
We know people who
lost. And we got a lot of messages from people who were worried about us, and thank you. The geography of it was just between us and your mom's house.
Yeah.
Got wiped out. And your mom called us, and we called your mom. And are you okay? Yeah, we're fine. Are you fine? Yeah, we're fine too. But in between was flattened.
And south of us was a little bit flattened.
Some of these central Illinois places. Yeah. And we talked to a guy yesterday who apologize to you that his boss hadn't gotten back to you about some business thing, and his house was destroyed in the tornado. It's like, dude, we don't have to worry about it.
And it was his family's ancestral home. They had one.
Yeah, it was just his great grandfather or grandfather built this house, and
it's gone.
It's completely gone, and it's just so sad.
And he's at work, and he's apologetic. I mean, for all the fun I have at poking fun at the various conservatives that exist around me, and the fact you can go all day and not listen to nothing but Rush Limbaugh on two stations here, or Glenn Beck if you prefer. They're awfully nice people down here who are every bit as Midwest nice and friendly and hospitable as you would ever imagine.
Mm-hmm.
But we got really lucky. Fluke of geography spared us the worst of it. But it was... Man, it came up fast, and it was just pure dumb luck that we're untouched.
Still standing, and really we're untouched by the storm. But we certainly have a lot of prayers and a lot of support for the people. I know they'll be doing a collection in church on Sunday for the victims of that storm. So, and we want to thank some people. Are you gonna do letter E?
Why don't we
talk about letter E on our list here? First of all, thank you to everyone who have sent us computer equipment in the past 3 weeks.
Yes.
A couple people have sent us some computer equipment.
Incredibly generous.
And one of the things that's hilarious, someone sent us some PC equipment and the kids immediately devoured that machine and they're playing with it. But the other one has an Apple on the outside of it. And so we told the kids that it will not play Minecraft or YouTube, so they have had no interest in opening it.
What?
We kind of lied.
It's like the anti-Santa Claus. No, this doesn't do anything you like.
It doesn't do anything you want to do. It's only for Photoshopping. Oh. Well, we don't want to play with that. You can't play games on it? Really?
That's terrible. Why would anybody make a computer like that?
Why would they make a computer like that?
It's awful. But, you know, it's sort of an old fart computer. So, okay.
You can't shop on it. Oh.
Yeah. Can I see Katy Perry videos on it? No. Katy Perry is completely invisible on this machine. Oh, that's not good.
Really? Because I wanted to watch Lady Gaga applause like 17 times in a row? Yeah, right.
Yes, they're that age.
They are that age. Mm-hmm. All right. So thank you for that. We appreciate it, and we're putting it to use. You want to talk about underemployment, both from a professional and personal perspective.
Yeah. The
thing is, you have helped unemployed and underemployed people throughout your career.
I have.
I mean, that's been one of your jobs.
I have gotten jobs either directly or indirectly for thousands and thousands and thousands of people, mm-hmm. either by direct action, direct intervention, teaching them how to do resumes, career counseling, coaching, et cetera. I worked with colleges created public-private partnerships to bully colleges mm-hmm. and bully high schools into changing their curriculum.
Yeah.
So that they would actually reflect stuff that people
needed to hire for.
Yeah. I'm sorry. Nobody does that anymore. That's 20 years out of date. And I don't care if your teacher likes to teach it. It's
useful. But we've been teaching on these Selectric typewriters for 15 years, and they're already budgeted for next year. So let's just do that.
They're coming back. Mark my word. This whole computer hoodoo is just a big flubity. You know, that's just a fad. It's going to go. So, and believe me, that's not
that's really not that far from
no.
the truth.
No, it's and there's this cycle of self-fulfilling, self-reinforcing delusion that causes institutions to stay doing dumb things because doing anything besides doing something dumb but safe will result in layoffs or catastrophe or loss of face or position or getting scolded. So, but I've gotten people, thousands of people jobs, help them get jobs, help them get reemployed. After Katrina, I was part of a team that helped people recover their resumes. Mm. When they came to Chicago, one of the things I was doing was helping people, you know, who were literally arriving with nothing but the shirt on their back, try to rebuild their lives, including getting a job. So I've worked with, you know, I've worked with drug addicts. I've worked with people who were fresh from prison, ex-offenders, as they're called, young people, old people, et cetera, which ironically, like a physician who gets a really bad diagnosis, mm-hmm. It robs me of the ability to pretend that things are not really bad. I know how bad things are. I know for a fact how bad things are. I know them from personally, but also professionally. And I know how really hard it is if you're over 45 and you've been unemployed for more than 5 minutes to get another job. If you are over a certain age and you're qualified or overqualified, part of me on my really depressing days says, I'm never going to have another full-time job again. Ever. Part of me says, you know, that's not true. Or you make a new career. You make a career out of little pieces. A consulting gig there, a part-time job here, or this or that, or this or that. But it's really true that the world of employment has changed. And the thing that prompted this was a letter in the New York Times that really caught my attention. This woman who was exactly my age and she was homeless. And she had pretty much my experience. She was a working person for her entire adult life, she'd saved, she, you know, et cetera, et cetera. And she got laid off. Mm-hmm. And what I have seen, people I've counseled, people I've helped, people I've tried to sort of get, you know, trained into a new career or just, you know, find them any way back, which is really hard to do. It's that incredible depression that comes with it because, and I've heard this directly from people that they've been told, we don't hire the unemployed.
Yeah.
I've also heard directly that the last time I was out of work, I could get a job in a week.
Yeah.
And, it's never occurred to me that as qualified and competent, and I'm speaking now sort of in the royal we, as competent and qualified and good at my job as I was, that I'm out of work. And so I go to a headhunter and I apply around and I try and then I get a job that I'm qualified for. And there are plenty of jobs out there that these people are qualified for that they're never going to get because there's a fear of hiring someone whose health record might be bad. Yeah. There's a fear of hiring anybody at all. A lot of companies, it's just the HR department exists to deny people employment.
Yeah, yeah.
That's all they do. And because, again, hiring anybody is a risk. Hiring nobody is no risk.
Yep.
It's always easier to lay off
really
a bunch of people.
It really is the job of personnel to not hire you or to find a reason not to hire
absolutely.
You. Absolutely. Seems to be absolutely the case. Yeah.
And it's easier, and this is just brutally true and has been getting more so since the 80s at least. Mm-hmm. It's just easier to fire 10 people and dump their work on everybody else and say, you're all lucky to have a job.
Right.
Well, how am I supposed to do this? Hey, that's not my fucking problem. Mm-hmm. Figure out a way. And that's why you have people working 100 hours a week, desperate and terrified and exhausted because the alternative is, you know, nothing. is a wasteland. And part of me is convinced, I liken this to the unemployment and underemployment of people of a certain age who are highly qualified. That's what I'm talking about. People who need training, who need additional education, who need et cetera, they have horrible problems too. Young people trying to find work are coming up against people my age who aren't leaving their jobs, who should have been, who have been promoted or whatever, because there's no place for them to go.
Well, and I was deeply saddened by that letter in the New York Times because she had gone so far as to apply for jobs at McDonald's, which, you know, is what you hear on the right wing media is, well, you know, they're hiring it. There are jobs just going begging out there that if people really want to work, they can work.
Uh-huh.
And she'd been turned down at McDonald's because she was too articulate.
Yeah. Yep.
And just you know, these 50-year-olds, us 50-year-olds, are not being hired because we're too smart.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying that to pat myself on the back, but I'm saying there are lots and lots of places of employment in this country these days where what they want is a drone to sit there and do the work and shut up.
And someone they can fire when things go wrong.
Right, because you're just there to...
You're there to be tossed on a grenade should the need arise.
Right.
And part of it, and this is part of if you're over 45 or so and not able to find a job after years of looking.
Mm-hmm.
And people just, you know, again, you listen, if you listen at all to right-wing radio, it's your fault. You're morally depraved. You're lazy. You're this or that.
Mm-hmm.
And there's all these lies about unemployment, employment and unemployment. Unemployment in Illinois amounts to about $200 a week.
Yeah.
It's nothing you can live on. This idea that every conservative has a cousin who knows a guy who's making 50, 60 grand a year. He's just raking it in on unemployment. He's just ripping the system off, man. And he got a lot of good job offers. He said, screw that. I'll just sit on my ass.
Sit on my butt and watch soap operas. Yeah.
That is absolutely not true. And yet that belief, like welfare queens and young bucks, drives public policy. Because all these people out there really need that to be true.
They do.
Because if it's not true, then America as they know it is not.
Has failed.
Has failed. And they cannot accept that. So you have people who believe this shit. And I'm telling you, look, this is my thing. And if you want unemployment in Illinois, you have to fill out a whole lot of paperwork. You have to open your life up to them. You have to apply for work every week. You have to attest legally that you've done that. You have to provide a log of everyone you've applied to.
And if you get unemployment, that money applies
taxed.
As income towards whether or not you get food stamps. We have that personal experience of losing food stamps because of unemployment.
It's taxable income.
Yep.
If you lie, if they catch and they are auditing now that they've never audited before.
Yeah. Did you hear about that guy who recovered a wallet, the homeless guy or the guy who was on disability and so forth? And it was in Pennsylvania, and he recovered a wallet with $650 in it, and he was destitute, and he turned it in. He turned it into the police and was heralded as a hero.
Mm-hmm.
No one claimed the wallet for 6 months, and he got the money back, and he lost benefits because he didn't declare that as income.
Income.
And people on my email stream were infuriated that a public official had denied this person benefits because he got a reward and didn't claim it as income. But I really feel for these civil servants who would be, you know, slain and set fire to on the Rush Limbaugh show as helping welfare people cheat.
Right.
And would be fired if anyone found out that she didn't follow the letter of the law.
Yeah, those rules are there for a reason.
Yeah.
I don't happen to agree with a lot of those reasons, but they're there because
somebody wins the lottery tomorrow.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And I get that. Wins Publishers Clearinghouse sweepstakes and has all of a sudden has $1,000 a week for life and is still on the dole for food stamps or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
That stops because that's income. Winnings are income.
And every so often.
Winnings are income.
And very frequently, you are called into the employment office, and you're asked to produce that log. Everyone you've talked to, everyone you emailed, every resume you sent in, what was the result? You have to attest every 2 weeks, either
name
in person.
Of the personnel person you talk to.
And every 2 weeks, you have to sign an attestation, either digitally or in person. That answers a whole bunch of questions, one of which is, did you turn any jobs down? Were you disabled? Did you get any more money? Did you get an annuity? Did you get disability? And if you lie in any of that,
earn any interest. Yeah.
If you lie, first of all, they're going to take all your everything they gave you away from you.
Away. Yeah.
And they might put you in jail.
Yeah.
And they will certainly make sure that in the future, if you need any of these things, you're not going
to
get them.
I think we can tie this all to the 2014 election.
Yeah.
It's the economy, stupid. And that means that jobs, wages, and
sustainability.
Sustainability and immigration.
Yeah.
Rachel Maddow's been talking a lot this week to the Beltway about how, particularly, I think she's talking to the Democratic Senatorial Campaign Committee about populism works. Electorally, populism works.
Yeah.
But it works because it makes common sense to the common American.
Right.
And you would be talking about their quality of life to them.
And populism can be used for terrible ends.
Oh, yeah.
You know, the fascists were populists. See if this sounds familiar. A bunch of industrialists decided to fund a demagogue and a bunch of racists to find scapegoats for the nation's problems.
Yep.
And which were all a mask to get them more political power. Then one day the demagogues turned on them and the rest is literally history. Mm-hmm. Yeah, populism works great as long as it's pointed. You have the right end of it pointed at the right problem.
Yeah.
Many people of good conscience, of otherwise good conscience, have come to believe a lot of things about our economy that simply are not true.
Yep.
And they believe them because the alternative, because they hear it 24 hours a day on right-wing radio and Fox News, but they also believe it because the alternative is terrifying. Mm-hmm. So they keep insisting that the way to solve our economic problems is for those lazy people to just get a damn job. Mm-hmm. And when you break the question down into, well, what jobs? The jobs that you think they should be getting that made your parents prosperous don't exist anymore. Part of the reason those jobs don't exist anymore is the party you keep putting in political power let them go away, actually paid for tax subsidies to ship them overseas.
Well, and our party, too. Let's not forget that Bill Clinton signed NAFTA.
Absolutely. But if you're looking for if you're looking to bet on a particular on red or black, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. The people who I ask this question, if you will accept for a moment the theory that what you think isn't true, that what you think about unemployment is just not true, mm-hmm. that all of the stuff you want to do for poor people was called welfare to work. Mm-hmm. And that was done by the Democrats pretty much at the point of a gun because we don't trust Republicans to have the best interests of poor people at heart. But that worked in a boom economy. Now that we're in a deep, deep, horrible recession that's crippling people, the solution of shoving single mothers out the door with a voucher in their hands and go find a job, lazy, doesn't work. So my question is, if you accept just for the sake of argument that some of these things might not be true, maybe the poor people that you're referring to don't exist or not in very big numbers and they're not really lazy and they'd rather work. Maybe the number one recipients or the very high number of recipients of food stamps are the working poor. Mm-hmm. Maybe a lot of people who are on public aid are in the military because they don't make enough. So if that's true, then you have to ask yourself, why do the people I listen to keep lying to me? Why do they want me to hate the poor? Why are they so invested in me hating poor people and making me turning poverty and unemployment into moral deficiencies? Because then it's okay for them to beat them up. Then it's okay for them to scapegoat the weak and impoverished. Because as a person of good conscience, you would never kick someone when they're down. But if you can recast those people as sinister thieves and moochers, lazy bastards, then you have permission to kick them. Mm-hmm. And Jesus won't cry.
Yeah.
So before we can do real decent public policy, we have to get rid of the mythology that's driving a lot of the conversation. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And that's really hard to do because people are so invested in not believing that the zombies are outside the door.
Yeah.
Because that's the world they want to live in.
What you're talking about, I find it highly ironic that Fox News calls what you're saying class warfare.
Yeah. It is.
When it actually is class warfare that we are talking about
in the
opposite direction.
As Warren Buffett said, yeah, it is class warfare and my class is winning.
Yeah, all the time.
All the time. And the idea that you should unilaterally disarm yourself, mm-hmm. and that's a good idea. Mm-hmm. Hey, let's have campaign finance reform, but only for Democrats. You know?
Well, And no. the guy who changed the oil in my car yesterday, whose grandfather's house was flattened by a tornado.
Mm-hmm.
Climate change people. It's not just weird weather.
Yeah.
You know, he pays payroll taxes 12 months out of the year.
He does. He does.
And if somebody making $1 million a year in salary doesn't, they pay it 3 months out of the year.
Yeah.
And if they're going to pay it more than that, their company will find a way to make their remuneration not be salary. It'll be, you know, betting on the stock market. You'll get stock market shits.
You'll get Lucy.
Won't be taxed at the same rate.
Listen carefully, dear audience members, and the three conservatives who listen to this show. There is a world of difference between being furious with the government at wasting your money, which I am. Believe me, I've seen enough government programs go down the shitter for reasons of incompetence or nepotism or whatever. Seen them up close or read about them in the paper. Millions, hundreds of millions of dollars just pissed away to make me hopping mad every time I see one more thing pop up. That being said, the reason I'm mad about it is I think government is necessary. I think government makes our country a better place. I think it binds us together as a community. And I think people who screw with it and wreck it destroy the public confidence in our ability to solve our own problems, which is lethal.
Our society's ability. Yes.
And they make people apathetic. They make people abandon the process. They make people just turn their back on the whole concept of self-government, which I think is just – which plays directly into the Koch brothers' hands, frankly. So there is a huge difference between saying I'm furious because I insist the government do a good job and I'm furious because government exists at all.
Mm-hmm.
Because people who just hate the idea of government and their whole agenda is getting rid of government as fast as possible, wrecking it wherever possible, unfunding it, defunding it wherever possible. When they're in office, run up huge deficits so that when they're out of office, you can say, hey, I've got no money. Those people are not your friends.
Mm-hmm.
You may share a conversation with them and you might find yourself sounding really remarkably similar. But I'm pissed because I, as a taxpayer, have every right to demand that my government do the job I hired it to do.
Mm-hmm.
Those people want government to wander off into the woods and die so you can have direct corporate control over your life. They think they're going to live out some fucking John Wayne fantasy, and that's not how the future unfolds when government steps out of the way of transnational corporations.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
In spite of the sucky job situation and everything we've been talking about for the past 10 minutes, we are grateful. And
we really are.
We're grateful to you guys. We're grateful for your support. We're grateful for the opportunity to do this podcast and the technology that makes it possible. What we would like to do next week is ask you, what are you grateful for? I will say I am grateful that Dick Cheney is no longer vice president.
Yeah.
Biden.
Yeah.
Send us what you're grateful for. Please put gratitude in the subject line and send it to proleftpodcast@gmail.com. And we will be reading some of these on the air. You can also leave a message at the Professional Left Facebook page if you wish.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll read your comments on the air next week.
And really, don't force me to make these up under an assumed name. Because you will not like the result. You will not like them at all. I'll be amused, but you won't be.
And we are grateful for a letter we got this week from Chris in Washington State. He says, Blue Gallon Drift Glass, I just wanted to add to this rather small donation. Ha! Whenever we get anything, we are always just very grateful for it. There's no small donations. I just wanted to add a note to say thanks and keep up the good work. I'm trying to live on my postal retirement. Yay, postal unions!
Yay!
Even though I'm not really set up to retire, my mortgage is not paid, and I have no secondary savings, etc. Hey, that sounds like he's an American.
Ah, welcome to the club.
But nonetheless, I consider myself fortunate to have the opportunity to expand my horizons by having the time for self-reflection and educating myself on the broader, very complex understanding of the power structures that exist in present-day society. The both of you have been a big help in that pursuit, and I thank you.
Thanks, Chris.
Try to keep the faith and continue to support each other so you can continue to do the same for what I can only guess is a proportionally small but growing percentage of the people struggling to make sense of the bullshit that is our corporate America.
Yeah.
Thanks, Chris. Hey, Chris, you're awesome. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Chris.
We really appreciate your letter and contribution. Each week we post to our Facebook page and website an internet kitty sent in by you, the listeners. This week's internet kitty is George Stanley Lord Strange. And George Stanley Lord Strange owns Nani Mouse of Crooks and Liars. She's one of our fellow bloggers over at CNL. So,
Yay. Hey,
Nani, and we're glad to have your kitty on our Facebook page and website this week. You can send your internet kitty to us at our email address, proleftpodcast@gmail.com, where you can also write to both of us. Feel free to write us. We do love hearing from you, and we look forward to reading what you're grateful for this year.
Mm-hmm.
Be aware that if you write us at any of our addresses, we reserve the right to read your email or U.S. Postal Service, Go Postal Unions, letter on the air, unless you say otherwise. So, Driftglass, how are the internet kitties doing this week?
Well, Blue Gal, the internet kitties would like you to know that government of the people, by the people, and for the people shall not perish from the earth.
Let's think about living. Let's think about loving. Let's think about the hooping and the hopping and the bopping and the loving, lovey-dovey. Let's forget about the whining and the crying, the shooting and the dying, and the fellow with the switchblade knife. Let's think about living. Let's think about life.
Professional Left Podcast is recorded under a Creative Commons license, copyright 2013, Driftglass Blue Gal Podcast.